Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 137 for the 25th of June, 2011. And I should have no problems remembering that date, considering that yesterday was my birthday. I was writing the show notes.
I would start singing happy birthday, but I'm just not that kind.
Well, no, also we have to pay royalties or something on it if you do that.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
There's some weird, if you start singing the happy birthday theme, you get sued out of existence. So,
I hear they come back through like mirrors and windows and actually tear your eyeballs out. Those ladies, are they still alive, the ones that originally wrote that song?
I have no idea.
Somebody holds the royalties
for it, and they've been very aggressive in their following up on it. Yeah. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, you know, whatever.
It's kind of that morning, isn't it?
It is. I'm not bad. I'm not good. I'm just here.
Yeah, and I got a head cold, so we're all doing well today. So we will endeavor to push through as best as we can.
For you guys.
Delta in our chat room, by the way, we do go out live. You can follow this show. We start around the 12 o'clock mark. We're a little bit late again, as usual, but that's okay. We start around the 12 p.m. markish every Saturday at Australian Eastern Standard Time. And at 12 p.m. And Delta Knight, who is our researcher for this show and our moderator in the chat room, was having problems with his computer.
And have you tried turning it on and off again?
Well, he's just put in the chat room now. He's basically saying, okay, damn computer is working now. Seriously? It's such a typical thing with computers is that you just have to hit them in the right place and they will start. So,
that's true.
Okay, so what is this show? This is the Geek Actually show. This is where we basically...
Who knows?
I just tweeted out and said it's basically the show about nothing. It's where we get together and we just get to geek out for a week.
We just talk, you know, shit.
We get to geek out for a week? No, that's not right. No. We geek out for about an hour.
From a week.
from a week. That's right. We have a look at the week's geekiest stuff, and then we put it together. And the only thing that we don't include in here is film and television because we've got our own show for that. So that's the follow-up show to this, which is film, actually. Yeah. But everything else falls into this category, and that means everything. Whether it be technology, whether it just be stupid things people do, whether it be food, whatever catches our attention, and we just do it. All right. So this week we've got some feedback, and the feedback's not going to be as long as last week, I promise you. But we do have the feedback has actually brought up a couple of stories.
Right.
So I think we should really talk about these stories. First of all, Calisynth. First of all, I just want to put out a big thank you. I was going to save this for the end of the show, but I'll do it now. What the hell? I want to put a big thank you out to Geek Betty and to Calisynth, who both became reoccurring monthly donors. So if you don't know what that means, we do take donations on our site to help support the site because we have to see movies and buy technology and all that sort of stuff. And one of the options you can do is subscribe for $2 a month through PayPal, and they became monthly subscribers for $2 a month. So thank you very much, guys. Okay, now, Calisynth in our chat room has sent me an email. This was actually late to the game. I got this last night. I'd put everything to bed. The whole show was finished. And then this came through and I said, so it's not actually in your show notes. and I went, because I'd already sent you your show notes. And I said, I've got to add this in because this actually kind of clears up something. And you may know about this already because this is more your wheelhouse. It says, hello, Dave and crew. A little update on the EA Steam debacle. Turns out it wasn't EA that pulled the games, but Valve was the one who pulled it. And now the internet rage goes silent because Valve can do no quote unquote wrong.
Yeah.
So it's very odd. So apparently there's an article and a link to attach to this, but apparently the highlight of that article basically said it's unfortunate the Steam has removed Crysis 2 from their service. This was not an EA decision or the result of any action by EA. Steam has imposed a set of business terms for developers hoping to sell content on that service, many of which are not imposed by other online game services. Unfortunately, Crytek has an agreement with another download service which violates the new rules from Steam and resulted in its expulsion of Crysis 2 from Steam. And Steam 2 continues to be available from Origin. Yeah. So it was Valve. It wasn't EA. In this, so last week we talked about how EA had pulled their games, but there's still actually a lot of EA games.
Oh, and this is why I was confused. Like, I didn't quite get why Crysis had been pulled, but nothing else had.
So, yeah, they violated the new terms of service for Valve. So it makes me wonder, maybe Valve needs to look at their terms of service.
Mm. Well, look, I mean, business is business. So, you know, like, they did what they had to do. I mean, I'm not, like, immediately like, oh, Valve, oh, I can never trust you again. But there's a part of me that goes, well, what was the deal behind that?
Yeah. I just think it's very interesting. And he's so right in that email, though, where Calisynth says, and now that it's been proven to be Valve's problem,
yeah,
everybody stops complaining.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, well, all right then.
Steam really does have that kind of god complex at the moment, doesn't it?
It's been the only choice for that freaking long. So, you know, who knows?
I am drinking my beverage out of my fine Geek Actually mug, which you can find at cafepress.com.au/geekactually.
Old style mug.
There you go. Sorry, shameless plug time. We also have Tristan, who alerted us to this new camera tech. And check this out. This is amazing. Mm. And my notes are all out of order here. Oh, no, I think Tristan didn't. Did Tristan actually send me a letter? Yeah, Tristan, here it is. Tristan sent me a letter and said, "Hey guys, how good is this tech? Imagine using expensive telephoto lenses and being able to focus on anything in the shot after you have taken it." Now, this is really interesting tech, and I had a look at this. I'm a photographer, as you know, and so to have a look at this sort of thing is really amazing. As it stands now, when you shoot in RAW, you have complete control over all of the metadata of a photograph. You can redo the exposure and so forth. One thing you can't do, though, is change focal length. Now, this is real Blade Runner tech. This is that idea of being able to zoom in on a photo and stuff. I've got the photo here that they're using, basically saying if you take a picture with a close depth of field and the background out of focus, in post, you can reverse it.
Dude, that's like... That's really good tech.
Yeah, it's really good. It's coming from a company called Lytro, and they hope that it's not out yet, so don't get too excited, but it is coming soon, and they're hoping that this will really revolutionize photography, and I can tell you right now, that would really revolutionize photography. If you can, so I'm assuming what that means is like a RAW photo, it's actually storing all of the depth. Like an HDR picture records all of the different levels of so take multiple images and then combine them so that you can then shift between which focal length it is. The file size is going to be outrageously huge.
I was about to say,
so
you're going to be shooting like with one hard drive for a photo shoot.
So yeah, I'm thinking that it's going to be an enormous
Be like snap, snap, snap. Just sec.
But think about it. You take that family snapshot where like the photo they've got here of a baby sitting in front of the family. The family's out of focus in the background, but you screw it up and the kid's out of focus and the family's in focus and you sit there and go, oh, well, the photo's ruined. Well, not now. Now you'll be able to shift the focus back.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, that's just awesome. That is amazing tech. So yes, thank you for sending that through, Tristan. That is amazing stuff. And I will keep my eye on those people because I want one of these devices, quite frankly.
That's really
now,
cool.
Now, Rob Lee and Clara Tungle both sent this link through, so I thought we probably should talk about it. It was just basically a link. They didn't send a lot of stuff. Rob actually told me on Twitter. Rob and I got into a long Twitter discussion. We'll get to that in a minute. but basically, they sent this link through. This is the new world's fastest supercomputer.
Right.
It is three times the calculations per second of China's previous record holder, which was, so this is Japan were basically pissed off that China had taken this mantle, and so they created the K computer. This computer is capable of making 8.2 quadrillion calculations per second. And if you want to know what a quadrillion is, it's a 1 followed by 15 zeros. Or in other words, 8.2 petaflops. The previous fastest machine was a Chinese computer, the Tianyi 1A, which was only at 2.5 petaflops. Apparently, this computer is made up of 672 cabinets stuffed full of computer stuff, and they're actually planning on increasing it up to 800 cabinets.
Jesus.
So I actually have a picture. This was the picture that was with the article. It's a pretty impressive looking beast, if that is it. I'm not sure if that's it, but it's a pretty impressive looking beast.
There's a lot of computers.
That's
there.
A lot of computers. So, so
I can officially tell you, though, and this is actually on record from them, it still doesn't run Crysis at full specs.
Really? You're kidding me.
I'm just making that up.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm
Nothing just... runs Crysis well.
Apparently there
Am
are
I
some...
Am I right, chat room?
Okay. Now, onto this Rob Lee thing.
Yeah.
Rob and I got into a Twitter discussion. Because he brought up a few points that we talked about last week.
Right.
So I printed my Twitter stream with Rob. And Rob, by the way, is from The Real Junkies.
Yes.
Which you can find at weekendronin.com. And Rob wrote to me and said, we have fiber to the house in Verizon Fios. We just don't have the option of getting it everywhere in the U.S. Now, we've actually already talked about all this. I'm just telling you guys what was discussed. And I actually said, yeah, but what Wozniak was talking about last week was he doesn't think we'll ever get across America fiber to the house, everyone. which is what the Australian government is trying to do. They're trying to bring fibre to the house across Australia, every single house. And then Rob said, oh, yeah, well, in that case, yeah, that's probably true. So, yeah, that's so we cleared that up. And then he also wanted to point out to us that he said they didn't bring down, when we're talking about LulzSec, he said they didn't bring down the CIA computers. They brought down their website. And I did actually, and I said to him, I think if you go back and listen to the episode, we did actually kind of throw away the word website. I don't think we made it clear enough. Yeah, we weren't talking about their intranets. We were talking about the fact they brought down their website. I think my personal feeling is if they brought down the CIA computers, we wouldn't hear about it anyway.
Yeah.
The CIA is not about to give that information out. And I don't think they would be able to do that. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Hackapalooza 2011 in a little while, because it's gotten very interesting this week. Now the other thing he brought was a link. And I thought this was curious, so I would just bring this up very quickly. Apparently Best Buy in America is starting to sue people right, left, and center for using the word geek. So we got to watch our tail. Apparently they're trying to trademark this term geek because they've got their things called the Geek Squad, you know, where they go out in their cars. And there was a group of pastors at one point who were going around with a car called the God Squad, and they basically took them to court saying that the little car was too similar to one of their cars. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to state this for the record right now. You cannot steal our term. Chat room, I want everybody out there to stick up for it. This is our term.
Careful. Hey, all I've got to say to Best Buy is be careful, because LulzSec's going to come after you.
Yeah, and we'll get back to that in a minute, because LulzSec seems to be going after everybody. But let's face it, guys, we are the geeks. They cannot steal this phrase from us, and they basically say, oh, it's a Best Buy trademark. I'm sorry. We have worked long and hard to make the word geek acceptable. All right? And now that we finally got it acceptable...
It's our word, and it's not yours.
Not ours as in this show. Ours as in us, the geeks. All right?
Of course.
Yeah,
not
so...
us.
Yeah, and I was just clarifying for the listeners. You know, we're not trying to steal it for ourselves. I'm just saying, it's our word. All right? PopShot says LulzSec is gone. What?
What?
Not according to the reports I've got, but you could have fresher information. I do prepare the show notes a day in advance. And the internet moves bloody fast at the moment, let me tell you. All right. And lastly, we have one from Bianca, who says, hello, David and Josh. Now, bear with me for a second. We also have a show link out of her as well, but she did want to raise a couple of points. She says, I know you hear this often, but your podcast is very entertaining, and I'm so glad that I stumbled upon it. Well,
yeah.
we're glad that you stumbled upon it, too. This week's episode really got to me, especially the robot apocalypse videos. I use technology, and I like to see the development of technology, but when it comes to things that humans can do, I take a step back and freak out. It was a few months ago when I saw the video of the V2 of the Honda robot, the version 2 of the Honda robot, Asimo. Now, do you guys remember Asimo? It's that little walking, talking droid. It's kind of freaky. Now, she's put a link in here for this new version of Asimo, which they are trying to teach to learn. Now, this is scary stuff, and we'll have a look at this in a minute. It says his new software pretty much allows him to learn and make decisions for himself. This video just freaks me out. Soon Asimo may be our overlord, or am I just getting ahead of myself? Well, let's have a look at Asimo really quickly. She's going to say, but let's have a look at Asimo. Now, this video is very long, and I broke it into two pieces, and I've abridged it. I do suggest you go have a look at the whole video. It's about 7 minutes long, and you will have your jaw on the ground, okay? This is early days, but when we get to it, you start thinking, we're teaching this robot, which is already humanoid and already acts like a baby. It reaches out to try and touch stuff and, you know, and everything else. We're teaching it to learn by teaching it to look at things. Now, as the guy said in this thing, looking at things is actually one of the key things to learning, and robots don't know how to look at things. This robot has been given two eyes and programming so that it knows how to analyze and make decisions based on what it's seeing. So have a look at this. This is the first part that I'll show you.
We tend not to think of seeing as a form of intelligence, but it most definitely is. It's not a simple matter of light going into your eyeballs. You also need your brain to process all the information so you know what things are, how far away they are, all that sort of thing. And we tend to forget, but as children, human beings learn to see. And similarly, robots, such as my old mate Asimo here, must learn to see as well.
This Asimo is the smilier, smarter brother of the one I met at Disneyland. It looks at the world through two cameras.
I'm sorry, the
eyes.
Smile makes it just look creepy.
Yeah.
We interpret these images as a man waving. But to begin with, Asimo can't interpret anything at all. Professor Kerner here may as well be a psychedelic swirl of digital rubbish.
All right, here we go.
Once we have Asimov's attention with an object, he can have a go at identifying what it is. Now, he's already learned about 100 different things. I've got some of them here. I'm going to try them out. And this, incidentally, is merely because his ears aren't really good enough for the voice stuff over a distance. This is a direct tap into his brain. Anyway, Asimov. Toy duck. Yes, that is correct. It is a toy duck.
Look at the hands reaching out.
Give me.
Asimov to learn something new.
Okay, here he goes. He's going to learn something new now.
Two objects for him to identify. One is his grandpa from the 1950s. And the other is a Mini Cooper, the British one. So
he makes a big deal about the car later. Well, I didn't
learn these mark. From scratch. So let's see what he makes of this. Asimov.
His hand reaches up.
Unknown object. Grandpa. Grandpa, say, yes, this is correct, or no, this is wrong. Yes, this is correct. Okay. That means he's learned it. I will try that out later on. I'll go back.
All right, so, awesome. So basically at this stage, though, we could look at this video and we could say, okay, it's like facial recognition. You know, it's learning an object. The second video I've got here is where it gets really freaky.
Yeah.
Because the second one is where he makes a decision based on what he's seeing. And this isn't just recognizing something now. This is actually making a decision. So what they're going to do for our audio listeners is they put a chair in front of him, which he identifies, and he has to nod if he recognizes it or shake his head if he doesn't, or if it's not. So basically they say, is this a chair? And he nods if it's a chair. They take the chair away. They're going to put a stool in front of him, which is a chair, but it's a different kind of chair.
Mm.
And can he recognize it? And that's the question. So let's have a look at this part.
But what Asimov was about to do next was the really clever stuff. First, Dr. Gurick taught him to recognize an ordinary chair.
Learn what this flat thing is.
But this time, Asimov is not just learning the shape. It's looking at certain generic properties. The chair's flat, a certain height off the floor, and so on. And once Asimov's got it, he is to nod. We then showed it an office stool. Now we can see it's a type of chair. But it's nothing like the shape of the first one. So, will Asimov recognize it as a chair?
So he's nodding, saying yes, he recognizes that as a chair.
Yeah.
And just to make sure it wasn't cheating, I got them to show it a table and ask if that was a chair. It's not fooled.
You saw? Shaking?
No, shakes his head. Oh,
that's
not a
that's
chair.
So cool.
Hold on a minute. What you've just seen is a machine making a judgment. Asimov's identified an object it's never seen before recognizing its features and working out that these qualify it as a chair.
All right, so we've just been introduced to our robot overlord. All right. you know, somebody in our chat room, who is it? Callison says we just stick a Kinect on its head.
I assume that's kind of what the two camera system is.
It'll be basically a 3D camera. Depth of field. It'll be able to calculate all the various aspects. Look, I just think that is. Look, we make jokes about the robot apocalypse and we make jokes about our robot overlords, but I also really love technology.
Yeah.
So at the same time that terrifies me that we are teaching robots to think, that is the coolest ass thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You sit there and just look at it and go, that is just amazing tech.
Yeah.
I just find it incredibly creepy that it's a biped.
I think it's creepy that it kind of like leans down to look at things.
And its little hands, just like a baby's hands. It's always looking to try and grab and touch. It's wild, man. Follow the link for our audio listeners and for our video listeners. Follow the link in our show notes and watch the whole video because he goes on as far as to teach it the little Mini Cooper car, and they go through a whole lot more detail about how it works. Mm. And it is astounding stuff. Now, Bianca also goes on to say, and this is the part that's kind of interesting, says, I'm going to choose my words wisely for what I'm about to say next, and please, you are to argue with me on this, all right? But I do not agree with GM Foods. Now, we talked about GM Foods the other way. She says, it actually disturbs me that I am consuming something that has not actually been tested as safe by the FDA.
Yeah.
It was just put out there because it's convenient for production to produce. I think in Europe it's more of a concern, but on packaged foods, it must say it contains any product that has been genetically modified. I think it's a great idea, but it would never pass in North America because everything would be labeled. So I would like your thoughts. Also, I would like your thoughts on aspartame. I'm not going into my arguments about it because that's another email entirely. Thanks for your time. Keep on geeking. All right. Yeah,
thanks,
you actually stand on exactly the same fence that Josh and I were talking about, which is genetically modified in its concept is fine. The problem we have with genetically modified is it hasn't been sufficiently tested. We don't know what the long-term results are, and I think we were just a tad overzealous getting it all to market. The concept is great, all right? As far as aspartame is concerned, like all artificial sweeteners, it's the same thing. Yes, once again, great in concept. They're low in calories. I mean, we don't have any long-term data on aspartame. We do know that there were links at one point to saccharin causing cancer, which was very popular in the 70s, but aspartame hasn't been around long enough to have those sort of statistics put to it yet. So we don't know. And once again, we're looking at all these things. And you know what? There is actually nothing wrong with sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as long as it's used in moderation and we don't wipe ourselves out in sugar. Sugar is actually natural and, you know, and everything else. But for some reason, we have this obsession by thinking that if we use a sweetener, then we're going to get thin. And it's not quite worked that way. But anyway, I think Ricky Gervais has the right idea. If you heard him recently, somebody said, how did you lose all the weight? And he said, I just started to walk and move and exercise. He goes, I didn't change my diet at all. He just started to move.
Yeah.
Get out there. Get active, you know? All right. Callison says, but what testing has been done on non-genetically modified food? Well, we've got a few thousand years of experience with non-genetically modified food, so I think we've got a bit of data on that.
Yeah.
A lot less than the massive amount of testing done on GM crops. Yes, but Callison, we've been using natural foods for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what was it? I saw something the other day and somebody was saying, oh, but, you know, maybe, oh, the milk argument. Remember when we were talking about the genetically modified milk? Somebody in the chat, in our chat room, I think it was James from Melbourne, said, I think it's been tested. We've been using cow's milk for 2,000 years. You know, it's like, and it doesn't, you know, it irritates me a little bit that we sit there and go, it's not good enough. We need to find something else.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, and look, these are all personal opinions. You know, everybody is kind of hot under the collar about their own beliefs on this stuff. I just think that before we delve into anything, it's like teaching robots to think. Before we teach robots to think, maybe we should actually think about what the repercussions of that might be. You know, there's a lot of factors involved in all of this. All right, let's move on. One of our impending robot apocalypse stories, of course, was Asimo there, which we've already shown you. We also have a good piece of news, though, which is the military has come up with the first weapon to defeat the robots. Right. So, according to this article that was on Gizmodo, I believe it was, they've come up with a microwave warhead, and it says it's non-lethal unless you're a robot. Yay! Basically, what happens is it sits down. It's basically an EMP device. It's a targeted EMP device, but using microwaves, you fire it into the area, and it sets out a controlled pulse, which will hopefully deactivate mechanicals. So they're looking at it for technology, but we look at it and say, this is the weapon against the robots.
This is the one we're all going to be striving across, you know, broken bones and, you know, sort of massive amounts of T1 robots. We're going to be running across to try and get that so that we can disable an area.
Northey is very true. This is the truest words, and then we're going to leave genetically modified crops behind. Northey has said, everything kills you, choose your poison. All right. And it's so true. All right. So, you know, I agree with you. I think this is, we'll be in the days of the dark apocalypse, we'll be going digging, looking for the leftovers of these weapons.
Yeah, this will be where James Cameron's story kicks off.
We found a microwave rocket. All right, in general geek news this week, I do have one more email, by the way, from Geek Betty, but we're going to bring it up in food. Okay, so just remind me that we have to bring her up. I've got a data sheet here, Josh, which I'm going to put down so that you can actually have a look at some of the data sheet for it. Now, this week I had the opportunity to go to the Nokia launch of the N9, and I actually wrote it up on the site. This is the N9 here. This is the phone on the screen. It comes in three colors. Two of them will be at launch. One is coming a little bit later. That's magenta, cyan, and black. The marketing for this event basically said Nokia to disrupt the market with their new device. And my question is, can they disrupt the market with new device? And my answer is a resounding, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Look, it's a pretty phone. The key features of this phone are that it's got a edge-to-edge curved Gorilla Glass screen, no front buttons. It doesn't have a home button. You actually double tap for home. It's the new MeeGo operating system. So this is their long touted, waited for MeeGo operating system, which looks surprisingly a lot like an iPhone. It only has three buttons on it: volume, up, down, and the lock button, which are on the side of the device. And the case is actually made of one solid carved piece of polymer. Now, I actually found that really underwhelming, because you sit there and go, okay, it's a piece of polymer. Okay, it's pretty, but really, how hard is it to carve a piece of polymer? You could mold it in that shape. And it's much more sexy to say we carved it out of aluminum or something like that. So I think the polymer may have been... Look, I got my hands on it. I got to play with it. Not for very long. It is a sexy phone. It's very pretty. It's very smooth. The processor is nice. It's got a 1 gig processor, 1 gig of RAM. Comes in 16 and 64 gig models. The problem I have is that nothing about this phone was overwhelming.
Yeah.
There was nothing in this film that we haven't seen before. And it actually has one real big problem. And I actually brought it up with the guy, and he didn't see it as a problem. Now, you tell me if this is a problem.
Mm.
Its built-in browser.
Yeah.
Only saves bookmarks to the home screen. Now, let's explain the home screen first. It has three home screens. If you swipe, you go from the home screen, which is all the icons, which is what you're seeing on screen here. I can bring up a better picture of the icons. There you go, like that.
Yeah.
Swipe it again, and you get the multitasking panel, which is all the apps that are actually running. Swipe it again, you get the notifications panel. Swipe it again, you come back to home screen. It's basically a carousel. It just keeps spinning, right?
Yeah.
So it's three. The home screen icons is one continuous flow of up and down, right? Now, the problem is that, you know, so every time you add an app, it just, and you can rearrange them all you want, but you're going to have to scroll. And my thought is, once you get enough apps on that thing, it's going to be an awful lot of scrolling to get through this thing. But it gets worse, because the browser only saves bookmarks as icons on the home screen.
Wow.
So if you've got like 150 bookmarks in your browser,
you're going to be scrolling.
You're going to be doing an awful lot of scrolling.
Time.
And there is no way to make folders. There's no organization to it.
I mean, it's still an early operating system.
It's
but
a version
so,
one.
That's odd.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I thought it was very odd. Look, it's an 8 megapixel camera. Look, technologically, the phone is good. It's actually been designed in tandem with MeeGo. So the phone is designed to run MeeGo in every way. So it runs really smooth.
Yeah.
Looking at the picture on screen right now, though, I can tell you, I think that Apple's going to have fun suing them for their icons, just like they are with Samsung. There's a couple there that are really, really close. These icons, by the way, have a nickname from Nokia, and they're not officially called this, but the guy on the announcement said they're not quite circles and they're not quite squares, and Nokia has been calling them squircles. So everybody's calling them the squircle.
I don't know, man. I think this whole suing for a design thing is getting a little out of hand.
It's getting a little old.
It's a green fucking squiggle or whatever the fuck you want.
Squircle.
I prefer squiggle. But it's one of those, and it just has a green icon with a phone in the middle of it. I'm sorry, but that's like a universal's thing.
I think the whole suing for design is getting out of control.
Yeah, how about you be creative and come up with something better looking?
Yeah,
look, just putting it out there.
My thoughts on this phone are, if they want to disrupt the industry, the phone itself is good. Okay, it's got all integrated Twitter and it's all integrated Facebook. You can do it from everywhere. The whole thing is a social phone.
Mm.
The screen is lovely. The screen is a 3.9-inch Super AMOLED screen, so it's really bright. It's, you know, the touch sensitive stuff works really well. Technologically, the phone is fine. It's a good modern phone.
Yeah.
The problem is that it all just feels about 3 years old, you know? And so you sit there and you look at it and you go, I felt like when this guy was talking about the phone and talking about these new features, I felt like I was watching the 2007 Apple announcement when they
first... So do you think that they've been spending so long trying to catch up that they're just still in 2009?
I think so. That's the problem. I think they're still not quite there yet. And I think they would have been better suited to release this piece of hardware with Windows Phone 7 on it.
Mm.
I think the problem is that MeeGo is already a dated operating system. There are people the Nokia fanboys out there, you're probably going to like this phone. And you're probably going to think this is a nice device. It's much better than Symbian.
Yeah.
Okay. The phone operates and feels smoother and better than the N8 that we reviewed once before.
Yeah.
It's a much better phone than that. It's got near-field communications built into it, so it's got a lot of technology built into it. It's a petaband phone, so it'll be used on any network anywhere in the world.
Nice.
So it's got a lot of factors that are really good.
Yeah.
And those are really good factors. The only problem is that to disrupt the industry at this point, they're going to have to do something really radical, which they won't do.
Yeah.
And that what I mean by that is the only way this phone is going to disrupt the industry is if they released it at like $200.
Yeah.
They released this thing on the market at like $200 subsidized.
Yeah.
This would take off. But you know Nokia is not going to release this phone for anything less than $1,000. You know?
No.
And so...
Look, I'd like to say maybe $800, dude. But again, it depends
and,
on the
And the N8 was $1,000.
Yeah.
True. You know? And that's the thing. Nokia's phones are always way overpriced. And I just look at it and go, we don't have a pricing. It comes at Q3. They haven't announced pricing yet. But when it does come out, keep your eye on that price. Because if that price isn't astronomically low... people will just go with Android or iOS. They're not going to go with a Nokia phone at this point. Not if you want a smartphone.
But I look, know. I mean, people are still buying the... people are still out there buying the N8. And some people are really happy with it. People that haven't tried anything else or ignore smartphones because they think they're not doing it right or whatever. And so there will be people that will grab this. And look, I'd rather them grab that than an N8.
Interestingly enough, that one of the best features of the N8 that we loved, which was that USB on the go, isn't on this phone.
Exactly, which just makes me go, was it just, did you chuck it in because you needed something that no one else had?
It's bizarre. And they reduced the camera because the camera is a 12 megapixel on the N8. This is only an 8.
Yeah.
So this does shoot 720p. Full 16:9 HD video.
Yeah.
I had a look at the photos on it. Look, it's a nice phone. It's just, as I say, it just feels a little bit long in the tooth. That's all. It just feels like for a brand new phone, we've been there and done that already. I think that's what it kind of feels like.
Yeah.
It does play a wicked version of Angry Birds because the N8 had trouble with Angry Birds.
Yes,
this one actually
does
it quite well. All right, so that was that announcement. We also have a little bit about that Apple versus Samsung case that we were just alluding to before. Remember how Samsung said, well, if we're going to have to show you ours, you show us yours?
Yeah.
Well, the judges basically turned them down. So Apple does not have to produce their goods. At this point, the judge did actually put a condition on it.
Yeah.
But at this point, basically saying, no, that's not quite what this case is about, and no, you don't get to see the latest products because they're not actually out yet. They're not even been announced yet. So,
yeah.
Although there is a rumor kicking around, very, very strong rumor that the iPhone 5 may be coming out in September.
Yeah.
This is a very, very strange thing that they've just turned around and suddenly all these rumors are kicking around. I don't know how accurate they are.
Yeah.
So... iTunes Match. We talked about that. This is this feature where if they've got it, they give you the better copy. That way don't have to. But a lot of indie labels apparently are turning them down.
Good.
It's interesting. Well, it's good and bad because there's actually a part of me that sits there and goes, yeah, but you're kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face because Apple will upload it to their server anyway and you won't get anything then. You know what I mean? So because if they don't have it, they upload it.
But...
for you to use. But... if they can match it, then the person who belongs to it gets a little bit of money for it.
Right.
So
but how can they legally have their music on their server?
No, it's your music.
Doesn't matter.
No, this is this whole thing that the Amazon and Google have been doing where they're basically saying it's your locker, right? Yeah. So if you what the iTunes Match does is if you it scans your entire iTunes library and it's going to give you your entire iTunes library in the cloud.
Mm.
But to simplify it and to save uploads, what it does is if it owns the music that you have, it doesn't have to upload yours. It just gives you the version it has.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't have your song, then it uploads yours.
What's the box art there?
The box art is the Beatles.
Box art.
Sorry? Oh, the box. Now, it says here, this is from
I'm curious to see why.
Okay, this is from the Numero Group, which is a record label best known for issuing Forgotten Soul and R&B gems, said, "We feel that a great risk is being taken by Apple and the major labels that have accepted the terms of this new product wholesale with not a thought beyond the $150 million those so-called Big Four will probably divide and pay to their top executives. By that, we mean that laws that protect compositions and copyrights for songs are more or less being trampled under these agreements."
Yeah, I kind of get that. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, dude. I I'm not sure where to sit with this. I'm not probably going to be getting this cloud software. Like, I don't...
Well, you'll be off the Apple ecosystem by then anyway.
Possibly. I mean, you know, it's still a way up for me, either way to go. But it's not even about the thing. It's just I don't particularly like cloud-based software. I enjoy having a physical entity. And at the same time, I'm just not sure I want all my music in a locker.
Let's be very clear, because this is actually not streaming as well. A lot of people sit there and go, I don't want to stream my music. I want it on my phone. You still have to actually physically bring it to your phone. What this is doing is basically giving you the option of, no matter what device you're on, that belongs to you, of course, that you're on, if you don't have that piece of music on there, but you feel like listening to it, you have access to it.
Yeah.
And you can download it from wherever you are. So it's only your...
Northeast calling it Napster version 2.
I would agree with you if other people had access to it.
Yeah.
How long until that happens, though? That's the question. Yeah. Look, I just think at this point, to just blanketly say no, the music's going to go up there, people are going to use the service regardless, you might as well make something out of it. You know? And at the moment, if they basically say no, we don't want anything to do with it, they're not going to make anything out of it. You know? So I don't know. It's a difficult situation. I actually think Apple is charging too little for this service. I think that's the biggest... Because they actually say $25 isn't enough. So for them, it's about money, right? Yeah. I think Apple could quite easily have said, we're going to charge $50 a year, or even, as you said originally, like $20 a month.
They could get away
with this, and people would pay.
Yeah.
And although somebody actually raised a really interesting point on a show that I was listening to the other day, and I can't remember what show it was. Maybe the chat room can help us out. Well, Richard from DVD Bits has just entered the chat room. Hello, Richard. He actually mentioned in this article, they said, well... What happens, you know, you replace all your music with this cloud match service. What happens if you decide that you don't want to subscribe anymore?
It's the Facebook thing all over again.
Yeah,
it's
but like, if you've already downloaded all the music to your local machine in this new high-quality versions and everything else, and you decide not to be with them, haven't you got the music now? What's to stop everybody from going, $25, thank you very much, replace my entire library, and then that's it?
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
You know, I like that. You know, it's like, I don't understand. They haven't quite cleared that part up yet. Do they delete all your music? You know,
yeah.
It's like, so, yeah, I would be very curious to know.
I don't know. It sounds like Apple's trying to create this kind of like control over it, though. And that's what makes me think that being Apple's kind of an ecosystem, I see some sort of that kind of situation attached, like the kind of thing where unless you continue to pay it, that music is removed, yours or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just... It strikes me as that kind of thing, because if you're getting this version of it, you're getting their version of it. And it's almost like you would think that if they're giving you this high quality version, there must be some stipulation like that
involved. There's a catch.
There's got to be a catch.
I did find out what the machine limit was
what?
For iCloud.
Yeah.
It's 10 devices that you own or maintain,
yeah.
But there is a breakdown of those 10 devices. Apparently, only 5 of them can be physical computers.
Right.
So you could either have 10 iDevices, that's fine. But if you're using computers, only 5 of the 10 can be physical computers, and then the other 5 can be iDevices.
Mm.
And I actually counted the computers in my house very quickly in my head, and I went, I just make it. I have 5 physical computers, and we have 5 iDevices. So it's, we just make it. All right.
That's great.
Well, surely you can listen to the music offline if you've well, that's the whole point. It's not streaming. You download it to your machine.
Yeah.
It's on physically on your machine. So what's to stop you from saying, oh, okay, I'll whack out my bandwidth cap this month and literally download my entire iCloud to my computer and then cancel subscription?
Yeah.
You know, I don't see how they can stop you from doing that somehow.
Anyway, I don't know. Either way, it'll be fun.
It's going to be a fun time at the end of this year, let me tell you. And... how will their servers hold up once several million people try and do this all at once? It's going to be a very interesting time in the Apple world.
It'd be hilarious.
Let's see how this data center they built holds up. All right. The New York Times iPad policy sucks. Can I tell you that right now? All right.
Why is that, Dave?
The New York Times has this new paywall. You know how they put up a paywall, which basically says you can look at a certain number of articles and then you have to pay to get in any more articles and blah, you know. And I don't go to the New York Times that often, but when I'm doing show notes, sometimes you run into this paywall and you go, it's a fucking thing, you know? Well, apparently, I haven't tried this yet. Somebody else can try this if they want to, but I haven't tried it. But apparently, according to this article on Gizmodo, if you now go to the New York Times website on mobile Safari on iPad or on iPhone, it just says you have to buy the app.
Wow. First company making a stand on this.
So basically, you can't even access the New York Times website.
Dude, you know what? I'm sorry, as someone that's an aspiring slash, you know, mildly getting paid for journalist, well, I should say reviewer, not journalist, but anyway, fucking A. I want everybody to start doing this. No, look, information is free. That's cool. There are lots of sites out there like ours that will give you stuff for free. But newspapers get exclusives. Newspapers get all this information because they get paid for it. Like, that's the point. These people are supposed to be on a higher tier, and they're supposed to get this stuff because they get paid for it.
I agree with you, but I think that if what is available on your PC's web browser should be the same as what's available on your mobile web browser.
But you were saying there's a limit to how many times you can
access. But on the web browser on a mobile device, on an iPad or an iPhone, yeah, you can't even access the website anymore.
And I'm sure that as time goes on, they're probably going to lock off the website as well. No, I mean it, man, because I mean, like, this was essentially what online has needed to do for ages. And I'm sorry, guys. I mean, like, yes, it's cool that, you know, information is so freely available right now. I mean, that's been the joy of the internet.
Yeah, but can I point out that if you use Atomic Browser, yeah, or if you use Opera, or if, yeah, you use any of the other browsers that are available in the App Store, you can access the New York Times website.
And wonderful. And I'm sure that as time comes off, man, they'll lock all these things off. But look, I've been waiting for a long time for some sort of a website to make a stand and start charging for their data viewing, because if you're going to get current day-to-day news and you want everything up to date, that's supposed to be something we used to pay the guy to deliver a paper in the morning. You know what I mean? I mean, like, for this news structure to stay together.
I agree with you to a point, but here's
no, dude, people like us are out there to provide news.
Yeah, no, I agree with you to a point, but with the newspaper, though, with the newspaper in particular.
Yeah.
The highest cost,
yeah,
to a newspaper,
yeah,
is printing paper and transport.
Yeah.
Right? Delivery.
Yeah.
Right? So tell me, riddle me this, Batman. Why is it that subscribing to the digital version of the New York Times costs more than subscribing to a paper version?
I don't know, because it's second-to-second updated.
No, it's not. Is it?
Isn't it?
I don't think it is.
Like, if we were accessing web content here. We're talking
web content,
I'm talking,
okay,
about, dude, and I'm sorry, we're getting into a bit of a side tangent here, but
hey, that's what we do.
We're talking about up-to-date content, right?
Yeah.
And as we move along through this world, I want people to start charging for this, because this is supposed to be the separation mark. This is what stops, and sorry to anyone out there that might take offense from this, this is what stops idiot bloggers and separates them from journalists or reviewers or whatever, is the fact that there are people that can sit in their basement and just say whatever they want, but they will never get the good content, they will never get respected, they will never get, you know, free DVDs or free movies or whatever. And this is the difference, because there's journalism and then there's just fucking talking out your ass about something you don't like. Right.
Okay, I will argue that the Huffington Post is just an idiot blog.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there are exceptions to this rule, but the separation is supposed to be that we can all get paid for this eventually.
Right.
And what I'm saying about that is that when websites like this start cutting off content and saying, yeah, sure, now pay me, right? And if you are regularly going there, it's kind of like in the same way that the people that respect us here on the thing would pay, so, you know, give us money every now and then to help us out. It's like, realistically, if you're doing a good job, you should be getting money for it. And that's why I don't have a problem with this whole paying for the post thing.
I actually think I like the old model better, though, which was that you could see the articles, you could see the headlines, you could see stuff, and if you wanted to continue reading, you would have to be a member to be able to continue reading. I think the idea of doing a blanket block is a silly idea, quite frankly. I think a blanket block basically says to the average listener or the average reader, well, I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When there are so many avenues now for news, and we're even talking about just the major newspapers, when there are so many avenues for news now, I don't think one newspaper can make the stand on their own.
No, but I think that someone has to make the first step. And the people like this are starting to do it now. It's starting to get closed off, and I'm kind of glad, because I would eventually like to go and start getting paid for writing. That'd be great. And
oh, Paige Schmidt.
Page. As if you don't want to get money.
Page made. By the way, did I tell you we accept donations on the website? Just go to geekx.com.
We don't want money. We're not shameless pluggers or anything.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. Seriously, you guys don't have to give us money. I'm just being... Well, you can, though.
You can.
Just saying.
You can. What do you mean they don't have to give... Yeah, you can. all right. Now, let's talk very quickly about Hackerpalooza. This is probably a longer discussion than we have time for, but Hackerpalooza continues. Lulzsec, in particular, has been going ballistic this week. First of all, they released the Lulzsec Manifesto, which is basically why they do what they do. And they released it out in this big, long form, and there's been lots of people who have analyzed it. The analysis I've got on it here is from Digital Trends, but the link in our show notes is also to the original manifesto, if you want to read the original one. But basically, Lulzsec says stuff like, and there's 28 points or something laid out, but we'll read a couple of them here. They've laid out points like the main anti-Lulzsec argument. I'm sorry, that's not what I'm looking at here. Where is it? Here it is, the manifesto itself. So they've said things like, for the past month and a bit, we've been causing mayhem and chaos throughout the internet, attacking several targets, including PBS, Sony, Fox, porn websites, FBI, CIA, and the U.S. government. More online gaming servers by request of callers, not by our own choice.
Yeah.
Sony again, and of course our good friend Sony. Mm. While we've gained many, many supporters, we do not have a mass of enemies, albeit mainly gamers, and main anti-Lulzsec arguments suggest that we're going to bring down more internet laws by continuing our public shenanigans, blah blah blah, right?
Yeah.
And it goes on and they talk about why they do what they do, and they're trying to make they actually come across in this manifesto as sounding, I don't want to say rational, but at least sane in what they're doing, but I still disagree with what they're doing. They're basically they're attacking for anarchy's sake.
Yeah.
Okay. They call their ship the SS Lulzsec or whatever it is, the good ship Lulzsec or whatever it is. I think they're actually slightly insane, quite frankly. But then we get this this second declaration came out, and I'm going to read this one because this one scared the fuck out of me, quite frankly. This one basically came out, and it says, "Salutations, Lulz lizards. As we're aware, the government and white hat security terrorists across the world continue to dominate and control our internet ocean. Sitting pretty on cargo bays full of corrupt booty, they think it's acceptable to condition and enslave all vessels in sight. Our Lulz lizard battle fleet is now declaring immediate and unremitting war on the freedom-snatching moderators of 2011.
Wow.
Welcome to Operation Anti-Security. We encourage any vessel, large or small, to open fire on any government or agency that crosses their path. We fully endorse the flaunting of the word anti-sec or any government website defacing or physical graffiti art. We encourage you to spread the word of anti-sec far and wide, for it will be remembered. To increase efforts, we are now teaming up with the Anonymous Collective and all affiliated battleships."
Wow.
"Whether you're sailing with us or against us, whether you hold past grudges or burning desire to sink our lone ship, we invite you to join the rebellion. Together we can defend ourselves so that our privacy is not overrun by profiteering gluttons. Your hat can be white, gray, or black. Your skin and race are not important. If you are aware of the corruption, expose it now in the name of anti-security." Basically, I think the words we're looking for is Lulzsec and Anonymous just declared war on all governments.
Didn't I bring this up about 2 months ago, that this was where we were heading with this? This is... It's scary, and I really just want to stay out of this.
Me too.
I'm happy to update now, and...
I want to make it very clear right now, right here... We are neutral in this battle.
Yeah.
We are going to
report on it, but I am not taking sides.
I am not taking sides. I'm not going to get involved in this thing. This thing is just wicked. Now, if you think that Lulzsec stops there, it continues. Apparently, they just released 62. Sorry, let me say that again. They just released 62,000 username password combinations into the wild, but didn't say where they were from. They basically just said, "Go play."
Wow.
And they are encouraging you to just grab these usernames and passwords and just try them everywhere.
Well, if it makes anybody feel any better, I have changed my passwords to everything.
Yeah,
so,
I would suggest everybody does this, because what they're basically doing, what the message behind this attack is, is they're saying if you are stupid enough not to have changed passwords and stuff over what's going on, this is your fault.
Wow.
So, and they're saying, here, have at 'em. All right? Yeah. And I think it's very interesting they didn't say what it was from. They just basically said, here, play, you know?
Wow, it's such an interesting concept to figure out where this is going to go.
Oh, man, it's terrifying. I tell you, it's terrifying. It's just, Callison said, this is a good time to remove all of your info from the interwebs and invest in cybersecurity companies. Thank you, Callison. And Delta has said in our chat room, "Oh, the fuck they can do is scary." So yeah. Basically, it's scary. It's Lulzsec hacked the Arizona police office and stole sensitive information. Yes, I read that one too. There was actually about 7 or 8 of these that Delta sent through for the show notes, and I was going through them, going, "Which ones do you pick?" You know,
yeah.
They are outrageous. Now there was also an article which is not related to Lulzsec, but it is hacking related,
yeah.
Which is in Australia right here right now, and I thought, you know, just to show that we're not immune from what's going on around the world, this article came out on the Register, which is in England, funnily enough. They're reporting about our hacks. It said thousands of Australian websites have irretrievably lost their data and email files following a malicious security attack on Australian domain register and web host Distribute IT. So if you're available, if you're involved with Distribute IT, I would check things quick. Okay. Basically, they were hacked and systems were just wiped out.
Wow.
Nobody has actually taken... There were incidents of pointing at Lulzsec and Anon and stuff, but nobody's actually stepped forward and taken credit for this one yet. So I would be very curious to see where that's going to go. The link for all the details on that is in the show notes.
Yeah.
And there was an article on Gizmodo, which we won't go into right now. Just very quickly, it's a very long-ass article, but I think we can summarize this in about a paragraph, where it basically said, is it about time to abandon passwords? And they're basically saying in this day and age of biometrics, things like retina scans, thumbprints, you know, voice scans, all this sort of stuff, it may be time to abandon the concept of username and passwords. I think we may have gotten to the point where it's too easy to hack them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certain things that are so much just you that nobody else can fake. Yes, fingerprints we've proven can be, like thumbprints and stuff can be faked, but things like retina scans can't be. You know what I mean? So unless you steal a person's eyeball, that's like in, you know, Minority Report. But that's a whole different wave of crime, let me tell you. All right. But they're basically, I think it's an interesting notion. I don't think we're quite there with the biometrics yet, but I think that's where we really need to focus on technology, because I think we're reaching the point where passwords are proving to be completely ineffectual.
Yeah.
Okay. While everybody goes thin and dainty, we all like our thin and dainty devices. Panasonic's decided to go the other way.
Nice.
And they're releasing, I've got a picture of it here, the Tough Tablet.
Oh, dude. Look at that fucking thing.
It's built like a brick shit house. It hasn't come out yet. It's coming soon. It's a 10.1-inch Android tablet, although, interestingly enough, on the actual advertising, it says Android 2.something. They're saying not 2.3? Honeycomb. No, 2.x. They're not specifying. Right. But they thought, hopefully, by the time it actually gets released, it's probably going to be Honeycomb. Who knows?
Could be.
But it's got GPS, 3G, 4G, strong battery life, all that sort of stuff. But it's also tough as hell.
Nice.
It's due for release. But look at this thing. It's got rivets in it.
As it should.
So, yeah.
No, look, that looks like a commercial device to me.
Yeah, and, look, it's the same market. It's the same market that would buy the Tough Book, the Panasonic Tough Book. So,
and let me tell you, those things are incredible.
Yeah, you could drop them off a house.
Yeah, I have seen like 25-year-old versions of those things. I'm kidding, but you know, like they are so old.
Real Bits in our chat room, Richard has said you could kill a man with that.
Oh, dude, for sure. Use it like a weapon.
Why is Richard in our chat room and not here in our studio? That's what I want to know. Richard, get your ass down here. If you get your ass down here in the next half an hour, I'll put you on the film show. All right. Facebook said, if you remember going back a couple months ago,
right.
Facebook said that the iPad was not a mobile device. And when they were talking about their mobile strategy, and they were saying, why haven't they developed an iPad app yet? And they said, because... The iPad's not a mobile device.
Okay.
Well, their Facebook app is about to come out on the iPad, so they seem to have changed their mind on that one. But more importantly, I thought this was brilliant. Apparently, Facebook has got what they call Project Spartan.
Project Spartan.
Project Spartan. They want to beat Apple at their own game.
Right.
And that game would be App Domination. They are preparing up a fully compliant HTML5 version of Facebook.
Oh, Jesus.
So all the applications on Facebook would also be HTML5.
Oh, no.
So all those people will be able to Farmville and do everything want straight on their iPads. Basically, all the apps will be for purchase through HTML5, through the Facebook store.
Yeah.
Basically, they wouldn't have to give 30% cut to Apple. Everything would be purely browser-based. They are going on the attack. This is going on the attack. They're going from the inside out, and they're going to show people that they can get another million people on Facebook just by iPads.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. So Project Spartan, keep your eyes open for that. It's not out yet. But if they can make this work, if they can make all those thousands of apps that they have run in an HTML5 environment, because at the moment they're all Flash. So the first trick will be to get everything running in HTML5, and then they can run their Facebook currency and everything else straight on the iPads.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for.
Oh, dude, that's scary.
Okay, Josh, this one was kind of for you, and I threw this in here, and you know, like all scientific studies, you could declare that, you know, any scientific study is stupid. But this one caught my attention. Gizmodo talks about it. We won't go into great detail, but they use gaming as the excuse, but you could take this project and apply it to anybody who is completely single-minded about anything.
Right.
But what they're basically saying is they took a control group of hardcore gamers who do nothing but game.
Right.
And a group of people who have a much more versatile variety of life things that they do.
Uh-huh.
And they MRI'd them all.
Uh-huh.
And what they found was on the gamers, or the people who are singularly focused on one thing, basically. So whether it be games or whether it be movies or whatever it might be, certain portions of the brain had shrunk.
Oh, wow.
Because what they found was that the brain starts to shut down areas because it's going out of, it's not being used.
Yeah.
So all the thing we take away from this, and this is for all gamers or anybody who is obsessive about modeling or wargaming or anything that where you are singularly focused on one thing, get outdoors once in a while.
Yeah.
Go out and do something. You know what I mean?
I'm a huge, huge supporter of this concept because to me it's like if you stop using it, I mean, like we all know that you get rusty.
The Tyrannosaurus Rex had little tiny forearms because over thousands and thousands of years, it didn't use its forearms.
Yeah.
And they shrunk. You know what I mean? So our brain is the same thing. And the thing is, if you are singularly focused on one thing, you are not doing yourself justice.
No. Nope.
Go out and explore the world. Find out more about things. Get away from your computers once in a while. You know what I mean? Go out and make babies or something. You know? Yeah. Go out and do something. Anyway, I thought it was interesting research. You can look that up in more detail in our show notes. Reason I'm pushing through is because we're running a little bit late here. Now, about that story, we'll skip. No, we don't have to skip anything. We're right here. Oh, we're back on track. All right, good. Popshot at the beginning of the show said, well, I think it was Popshot who said Telstra and Optus want to censor the internet. Yes, let's talk about that for a second, because there was two articles about this. The first one is, let's all cheer, pop the poppers, drink the champagne, and basically say that the federal government this week closed down the filter office. Okay, so because of budgetary cuts, they actually closed the office down.
Fucking
they actually did say in a press statement that they were still supporting the concept of filtering, but they closed it down. Okay, so the filtering department office has been de-staffed. It's closed. Okay?
Good.
But then a very curious piece of news came out which said that Optus and Telstra are voluntarily going to start filtering the internet as of next month. So they are going to voluntarily censor everything on the ACMA blacklist as of next month.
Right.
So they're going to go ahead with what the filtership plan was.
Good thing I'm not with either of those companies.
Me too. So if you are look, and quite frankly, I think censoring anything off the ACMA blacklist probably isn't such a bad idea anyway, because that's pretty ratty, shitty stuff on there. But the point is that why are they voluntarily doing this?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you kind of look at it and go, okay, I'm not quite sure, because especially Optus was actually opposed to the filter.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what their thinking is here. The voluntary scheme was originally proposed by the federal government last year.
Yeah.
It was a $9.8 million scheme to encourage internet service providers to block or refuse classification. But now that office has all been closed and everything, but Telstra and Optus have decided to go ahead and do it anyway.
Well, look, I mean, like you said, at this stage, I believe the blacklist is still just files, but do we have access to this? Like, this is
no,
this...
and that's the problem. Once again, why do we oppose the filter? It's not the idea of censoring content that is illegal. That's fine, censor it. But we should be able to have right of recourse and right of response if we get blocked. And yeah. Two, we should know what's on the list.
Exactly, and you know? That kind of scares me that they're just going ahead and censoring stuff.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing because, I mean, at this stage... From what we saw of the list, it's kind of pretty bad sites. Like, it's not good stuff, but there's kind of that part that goes, well, did you ask anyone about this?
No,
like, the whole
exactly.
reason that the federal government wasn't allowed to do this is because people weren't necessarily for it.
No, we were unhappy with the concept. We didn't know what was on that
exactly.
list.
And to have people just do this.
Digital Angel says TPG for the win. Popshot says I'm with IINet. We're with IINet as well. Yeah. We're starting to see. Somebody says I hope Internode doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
Look, keep an eye on your service provider. See, I don't think IINet would ever go that way because they were heavily opposed to the filter.
Mm.
So I don't think they would actually do it. But look, I just think this filter just won't go away.
Yeah.
You just think, just when you start to think you've won a war, or won a battle at least, it then raises its head again. It's like, God, just go away.
Dude, yeah, no, it's pretty scary.
Speaking of raising its head.
Right.
Do you remember the film Johnny Mnemonic?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Johnny Mnemonic, the idea was he had part of his brain removed and a RAM chip basically put into his head so that he could have information put on.
Yeah.
It's becoming reality.
What?
It's becoming reality. They're basically saying that scientists are creating memory chips that can be implanted into the brain. Now, they're doing it for medical reasons, and one of the concepts is for things like Alzheimer's patients. They can literally pre-record data onto that chip that says, this is your daughter, this is your wife, this is your what have you, blah, blah, blah. Put the chip in. What they actually found was when they activated the chip, they remembered who the people were. When they turned off the chip, they forgot who they were.
Oh, wow. That's terrifying.
So there you go. According to Dr. Berger, his quote is, flip the switch on.
Berger.
They've only done this in rats at this point, so I should make that very clear. Okay.
Yeah.
So he said, so when they put it on rats, it says, his quote, flip the switch on, the rats remember. Flip the switch off, the rats forget.
Yeah.
These integrated experimental modeling studies show for the first time that with sufficient information about the neural coding of memories, a neural prosthesis capable of real-time identification and manipulation of the encoding process can restore and even enhance cognitive mnemonic processes. He even uses the word mnemonic. So how long until we start having data smugglers with chips in their heads? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. Will they be able to spit a whole gigabyte of data on it? Nah.
Will it be like an insertable SD card?
There'll be slots on the back of your head. But it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah.
Or will it be that big thing on the back of the neck like in Matrix where you plug in? You know?
Oh, dude.
And in the article they actually say, I know Kung Fu. All right. And Delta Knight says, I could connect to the internet at the same time. Cool. All right. Now, speaking of biology that is just wow, like that's one piece of biology that's wow. How about a nanoprocessor that can be charged with kinetic charging? You know, this concept of kinetic charging where if you move it, it charges, right?
Yeah.
Well, what if we got a nanoprocessor that was so small that just the merest tap could charge it, right? The concept there would be maybe your pulse could charge it. They've actually come up with this. This is a nano generator that they're now talking about that could be powered by something as light as the pulse.
Yeah.
Now, this is amazing tech. And, you know, forget things like phones and all this stuff. Think about the ramifications of this. You could put this into this brain implant that they're talking about, you know, or a pacemaker.
Yeah.
The actual heartbeat itself charges the pacemaker, you know.
Yeah.
This is amazing conceptual technology. So scientists, this is from Gizmodo. The original article source is Science Daily. So scientists have developed the first self-powered nanogenerators that scavenge energy from their surroundings. It goes on, the slightest movement or vibration, such as a light breeze or the thump of your pulse, could charge this thing. That is amazing.
Well, it's interesting because we talk about, from the battery point of view, we talk about the fact that we need to redesign the concept of a battery. If you had a device, like a processor chip that could power itself, that takes a lot of weight off a battery. So you could kind of have a battery for, you know, day-to-day tasks.
Well, think about it. If you had something like that in your phone, just the mere fact of walking around or taking out to check your phone is charging it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that would be the interesting thing. It's like if you can start powering them from the inside out, you start shaking a phone around and moving it, you put charge in it, we may get rid of batteries altogether.
I think it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, very interesting piece of tech.
Yeah.
So I would be very interested to see where this goes in the future. Let's talk weird food. Now, Delta sent me a couple, and I got this, and I got that, but Geek Betty won the day. All right? Geek Betty won the
trumped
day.
She trumped you all.
She trumped you all because this week we're not going disgusting. Every week we seem to see how far we can out-disgust each other. She sent an email that said some very geeky wedding cakes.
Yeah.
Something a bit different for the geek food segment. Perhaps cheers, Betty, and happy birthday to you. Thank you very much, Betty. And I looked at these and I went, oh, these are fantastic. Now, for our audio listeners, these are very visual and you're going to have to go look. There's a whole bank of them. Yeah. I've got a couple here that we'll show in the show here.
Yeah.
Just to have a quick look at them. But you will have to look. We'll try and describe them. This is the action film cake. Okay, and as you can see, it's lots of little James Bond characters running around the cake, and the top of the cake looks like it's having an explosion that's falling over.
It's exploding and it's coming off. That's and
there's a plane crash at the bottom of it. I think these are just magnificent cakes.
Yeah.
The next one here is the gamer cake. This is my favorite of all the cakes. Are you ready? I love this. Ready? It's the bride dragging the gamer away from his console in his tuxedo. That's just joyous. Look, he's got a little PlayStation in front of him and the whole bit.
That's great.
We also have the portal cake, which I love. The cake is a lie. So I think that's very cute. This is the zombie apocalypse cake. The bride and groom have chainsaws. And there's little zombies crawling up the side of the cake. I think that's genius. Now, this one's a bit subtle. Okay, so I've got two pictures here. The first picture is the bride and groom looking at their cake. Now, I would like you to point out what the bride and groom are wearing. Okay, so this is a Star Wars cake.
Right?
So the bride and groom are stormtroopers here. Now, let's have a closer look at that cake. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's the Tauntaun with Luke in its stomach.
Man, totally want to eat some of that.
Yeah, now let's go back to that wider shot. You can actually see it's a Tauntaun laying out there on the table. I think that's genius.
Yeah.
So there's some wedding cakes for you geeks out there to get some ideas. And if you go to the website, there's more.
Yeah.
There's a whole slew of them. You can go over. There's actually one where the cake has been made to look like the bride. And it's a picture of the bride standing next to her cake, and it's like a life-size model of her.
Dude, that's creepy.
It's bizarre. So go have a look at those. And the real bit says, I thought they smelled bad on the outside. It's not what you want to hear on your wedding night.
No. All right. Sorry, that one sunk in.
All right, geek picks of the week. Now, I got for my birthday, this isn't in the show notes, but I got for my birthday, we talked about this on the show some time ago.
Yeah.
And I thought we would just have a quick look at this, because my lovely mother got me one of these. This is the Fling.
Right.
And basically, it just suction cups to the side of an iPad here, like this. And when you're playing something like Order and Chaos, it gives you a control stick.
That's so cool.
So, and it works very well. I'm not going to fire it up now, because it takes too long to load up Order and Chaos. But you can see, it's all it is just a touch-sensitive thing that just activates on the pad.
Dude, that's awesome. I want one.
And I was playing Order and Chaos last night with it, and it works really well. It's very, very smooth.
Why didn't you get me one, Marin? Where's the love for me?
What's the website for what? The cakes or for the Fling?
Dude, that's really good.
It's really good. It works really well. And you can get get two of them if you want. You can have one on each side for the games that require
two. I will.
I only have one for the moment, but that's okay. So I just thought I'd share that with you because I just got that yesterday and I'm going to have a lot more playing with it. So that's the Fling. And you can find those. You can actually find them, I think, if you search Fling iPad controller on Google, or if you go to eBay.
Yeah.
Lots of companies are selling them on eBay. Now, as far as other... Delta Knight says for both. The website for the cakes is in the show notes, so check the show notes. It's too long a website to mention here. Delta's probably got the link. Put it in the show notes. Put it in the chat room for us, Delta. Get to work. Make yourself useful. All right. Along with the Fling, I thought it would be good to mention that Wacom has actually entered the iPad tablet fray. And they've actually released a new note-taking sketch pad. Now, Wacom make tablets for doing pen work, and they've also released their own brand of stylus pen for the iPad and the whole bit. The reason why I bring it up is because it's not, look, Penultimate's already got an app that can do all of this, and Note Taker's already got an app that can do all this. But the most important thing about the Wacom one is until June 30th, it's free.
What?
So until June 30th, as a launch thing, their note-taking program is free. After that, they'll charge. So if you're listening to this podcast and you are interested in things where you can take notes or sketch on your iPad, go grab it. It's free. So June 30th is the cutoff, though. I got it last night, and it is still free. So in June 30th is their cutoff. Now, this is Lego's new set. This is the longest Lego set ever made. It is Darth Vader's Executor.
Ooh.
It is awesome. Now, I will point out that it makes 3,152 bricks to put it together.
Right.
It is 50 inches in length. It weighs 8 pounds.
Nice.
And I believe it's going to cost around $400 US. So it's a pretty immense, for those who aren't familiar with it or listening to the audio podcast, the Executor was Darth Vader's gigantic arrow-shaped Star Destroyer, arrowhead-shaped Star Destroyer. Lego is releasing a premium model of it, and it is phenomenal. No, it's not to scale. It's a real bitch. Wants to know if it's to scale. All right. What else have we gotten? Tips? I think that's it.
Yeah.
Do we have any more? Do you have any picks you want to throw out this week?
Just a few gaming things. If you have a PS3, Infamous 2 is a must-buy game.
I want to play it, but I don't have a PS3.
Yeah, dude, this game is destroying my life right now. It's just every time I turn around and play it for 5 minutes, I get lost on a freaking hunt for special hidden packages all over the map and lose 6 hours of time. It's just brutally addictive and the closest you will ever get to being a superhero. And on top of that, as a personal thing, if you are into mind-bending games, as in games that try and make storylines and maybe do things a bit differently to, say, Call of Duty, Shadow of the Damned is for you. Like, this game is an absolute trip. It is a grindhouse run to hell and back. And, look, it's not the prettiest of games, and there are probably better games out there, but if you're the kind of person that searches for games that are just different from anything else you will ever play, I'm loving this game.
Speaking of games that aren't very pretty, I thought we should probably put closure on this that we've been talking about. I finished Duke Nukem Forever.
Good for you.
I actually completed it to the end, and I have to say my final conclusion on it was that it wasn't the worst game of all time that I've ever played. It wasn't great. It has really good levels and then just crappy levels, and I actually decided that I figured out what it was. It is an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
When you start playing it, because you play 5 levels and you go, see, it's actually not so bad. And then it smacks you in the face with a terrible level and then gives you 5 really good levels. So you go, oh, I forgive him for smacking me in the face because I've got these other levels. And then it smacks you in the face.
No, it's
a completely abusive relationship. And now that I've finished, I've already traded. I traded it the minute I finished it. So it's like, out of my life. But it's done. Look, it's got some good stuff in it. It's got some really bad stuff. Stubby wrote a really good review on the site. Go read it. It's actually very balanced. He actually says it's got some problems, but, you know, it's all right. It's not. It's kind of like one of those games where you sit there and go, it had so much venom against it, and I don't know if it deserved quite that much venom, but it's not great, you know? I think the problem is it had so much venom because it just took so long to get here. Anyway, all right. Oh, we have one more iPad app. Now, I have no use for this, so I haven't tested it, but I'm sure somebody out there might have a use for it. It's called Coder with a K, and basically it is an app that allows you to write code on the iPad. So if you are a coder and you need something that's portable and you want to be able to write code, this is actually a coding app that'll allow you, give you full control over coding. I haven't tested it. I don't know what it costs. All right. I just thought I'd bring it up. Now, to finish us off, we normally do a piece of history. Now, Delta in our chat room, I want you to tell me whether or not the real bit says later, y'all, pants time. I'm not sure what that
means.
He's
going to buy pants. Like, actually.
Have fun buying your pants, Richard.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm not entirely sure where you were at when you brought this link up about Sean Connery, because it made it sound like he thought it might be real.
Yeah.
Now, I actually dug a bit, and if you actually dig back, you actually find out that it actually comes from a site called Scoopertino. Now, Scoopertino is a parody site that actually is like The Onion for Apple News.
Right.
And they just make up all their Apple News. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it is hysterically funny. All right? So I think we'll just bring this up very quickly. It's not video. It's audio. It's just a thing. Apparently, according to Scupertino, back in when Steve Jobs first came back and they were doing the whole Think Different campaign, they wanted James Bond. They wanted Sean Connery to do an ad. For the new Mac. So they sent this mock-up of the ad. This isn't the final ad. They sent this mock-up of the ad to Sean Connery. And for those who are listening to the audio, it's a picture of Sean Connery as James Bond, and there's a caption that says, "The children are snuggled. Santa's opened his pack. The man is Sean Connery. The gift is an iMac." And apparently it offended Sean Connery to such a level that he sent this letter, which I thought was just brilliant. Now, the letter says, and I will quote the exact letter, says,
I wish Dave Kay was here so we could do it in the voice.
Yeah, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it? It says, Mr. Jobs, I won't try and do the voice. It says, "I will say this one more time. You do understand English, don't you? I do not sell my soul for Apple or any other company. I have no interest in changing the world, as you suggest. You have nothing that I need or want. You are a computer salesman. I am fucking James Bond. I can think of no quicker way to destroy my career than to appear in one of your crass ass... your crass adverts. Please do not contact me again. Best, Sean Connery."
Yeah.
And it's a very official looking letter. It's got the 007.
It's got
the 007 logo in the corner. If that's not the giveaway right there that this is a parody, because he was trying to distance himself so much from Bond at this point. But apparently it is fraudulent. The whole thing is a put on. The thing that got me laughing, though, was if you go to the original post, they get into a huge fight because it's basically Jack Yan, who's one of their regular posters, apparently, goes on and says, "Not a bad fake, as fakes go," and then breaks it down line by line as to why this is a fake.
Yeah.
And then a person called Sweet Gypsy Lee gets on and starts fighting with him, saying, "No, it's completely authentic. I've got his signature. I know Mr. Connery. I've worked with him," and blah, blah, blah. And then he's saying, "You're a troll, man. Didn't you realize?" At the top of the website, it actually says, "All the news that's fit to fabricate." Right? It says, "Unreal Apple News." Right? This is a complete parody site.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop this conversation going on and on and
holy
on.
Holy crap, it just keeps going.
Go and have a read of this attack between these two people, because one person's saying it's a put-on, and the other person is saying, "You're an idiot, it's not a put-on. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen." And it's well worth going and having a look at.
Why would somebody defend something
I don't know.
Like,
they just it obviously really got under their goat about this thing. Delta says, "I don't read the whole articles because it takes too much time. I read the title and skimmed the article a bit. That way I get some surprises on the day of the podcast." Well, there you go. By the way, can I just say this now for Delta? Surprise. All right, so there's your Sean Connery fraud. That is a fraud, though. Can you, everybody, please be aware that this is a fraud? Sean Connery never had this. This never happened. All right, this is just a joke. It's a joke, guys. Joke, Joyce. All right, that's it. I'm done. I have no further news. I have no further use of this podcast. I think I am done. All right. Look, if you've got anything you want to add to this, we're getting a lot of reader submissions at the moment. By all means, keep those coming in. They're fantastic, and we love them. Just please try and get them in by Thursday if you can help it, because we had a lot coming in Thursday night and Friday, and it was getting really chaotic trying to fit stuff in. You can send that to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can send a voicemail 02. I do have this on screen here. Where are we? There we go. 02-801-13167 is our voicemail line. Please, by all means, send in a voicemail. Get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, everything. Geekactually.com. Just go there. You'll find everything. Okay? Yeah. And once again, I want to thank you to those people who did become monthly subscribers. If you want to subscribe, go to geekactually.com. It's right there on the side panel. You can do a one-off donation, or you can do a $2 a month monthly subscription. Every cent helps keep this show running, keeps us in all the stuff that we need to do. So thank you very much for those who have donated in the past. Watch us every week live on Saturdays, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. We start, our average start time is around 12 p.m. ish. We do Geek Actually, followed by our other show, Film Actually, which is coming up in just a few minutes, where we talk about film. And this week we are reviewing Kung Fu Panda 2.
I had to think about it for a sec.
Well, because we were dicing up two films there at one point. All I'm going to say to that is,
Don't see Cars 2.
Don't see Cars 2 and skadoosh. I love that. You can also check out some of our friends. Real Junkies, Rob, who sent us that wonderful Twitter stream. Rob and Fox and everybody else, Bernie and Greg, they're all at weekendronan.com. The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies podcast. Find them on iTunes. Go to their website. They're great. Listen to them. They're good. Josh, you sell something else. What is it?
I sell something else.
Yeah, you're flogging something else.
RawDLC.com. It's a gaming website. Go over and check it out. It is full of awesome stuff. We've got our second video up there at the moment with the production company we have.
Yes.
Which is LA Noir. If you guys could just head over that. We just need a couple more hits on that at the moment. Any help we can get to try and get these things off the ground would be great.
Ah, fantastic. Oh, yes. Sorry, the chat room is just reminding us. Delta can't give the link for the cakes. It came from Geek Betty.
Ah,
so you'll have to wait for the show notes. It's in the show notes. In the break, I will see if I can tap it into the chat room for you guys. Okay, so just not now. I don't have time. Hold on one second. Unless Josh wants to make himself useful, it's that link right there.
Why do I make myself useful?
You're good typing. I'm still doing stuff. we also want to thank our artist, Josh Spencer at attackninja.blogspot.com. His artwork is always fantastic. And considering that he was in our chat room today, we'll also give a quick shout out to Richard over at therealbits.com. He does movie reviews and so forth, and he's been on our show a couple times, and he's a great guy. So go check his site out as well. That's it.
That's it?
I'm done. I don't think I have anything else to do to advertise, flog, or talk about. So we're going to get out of here, get ourselves ready for our film show. I'm going to drop that super right there because we don't need that anymore. And I'm going to say, everybody out there, as Delta Knight would love us to say every week, geek on. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, chat room. We'll see you all next week. We'll be right back.